entrepreneur listening to this, one of the first things that I talk about is, well, what's the vision for the company? What do you want to accomplish?
He wasn't focused on numbers. He simply turned around and said, I want to have Fridays off. I think that is engagement right there.
So welcome to the Simon Dale podcast. Now, we've got something different this time. And as part of my plan for this podcast, I'm planning on releasing what I'm calling masterclasses. And these masterclasses are going to take a little bit of a different format. And the purpose of the masterclass is for me to walk you through, as a business owner or as a marketing manager, a marketing plan. Walk you through the ability to build your own marketing business plan. So that's the point of these masterclasses, and the idea behind them is that I'm going to break up every step of that plan into a little bite-sized piece that's maybe 30 minutes or 45 minutes long and share that with you. Now, to do that, I've also got Simon Bell back. Now, he appeared in our third episode, and he's going to look at everything we're talking about from a more objective point of view. Now, as you may know, he's a business coach. His marketing, I'm speaking for you here, Simon, but his marketing knowledge is maybe not as in depth as some of the, you know, mine and other people listening to this. But what I'm hoping is that he can give us a really good objective viewpoint of everything we're talking about. Does that sound okay, Simon?
Sounds perfect.
Okay. So what we're going to do is the first step in the masterclass, and the first step that I ever take when I'm working with a client, is to talk about their objectives. And the first step we normally discuss, and I probably lose track of the amount of times that I talk to clients that don't have objectives, is understanding what their targets are long-term for their business. And I'll probably throw this straight over to Simon as well, because I just wondered if this is just a phenomenon that's common to me, or whether this is something that you see where business owners don't actually have any sort of hard and fast ideas about where they want to get to with their business.
Yeah, it's not a Simon Dell only phenomenon, that one. That's I think it's fairly standard across the board. And I find it's either they've set objectives or goals in the past, and then they haven't achieved them, and therefore kind of, you know, maybe gotten a bit more conservative in how they set objectives in the future. You know, maybe once bitten, twice shy, didn't like the experience of failing. So let's not go through that again, and let's just go through the motions and hope for the best.
Yeah. When I set targets, when I talk to clients about setting targets, I normally try and get them to, the first thing I suggest, I normally reinforce with them, is that you don't have to hit targets. I know that sounds very strange, but targets can be moving feasts. You know, for example, if you achieve your target in the first 6 months of the business, you don't sort of shut down the business and go home. But at the same time, there's no beating. There's often reasons for not achieving stretch targets and those kind of things. So yeah, Targets are kind of living, breathing things. Obviously they're there for a reason, but you know, I like people to have a little bit of flexibility in them.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think the main reason why most people kind of get resigned to the kind of target conversation or the objective conversation is that most of the targets or objectives that I see are lag-based objectives, results-based objectives, as opposed to lead measures or actions.
Right.
And I think having a balance of the two there is essential.
Do you want to just quickly sort of explain the sort of difference between the two?
So a lead measure or a lead target is something, is an actionable target. So it's something that you can directly action. So we might be, let's talk about it in a marketing sense. And again, Simon, you summed it up well with my marketing knowledge, so excuse my ignorance. But let's just say, for example, Facebook followers as an easy one, right? The result or the outcome would be Facebook followers. I mean, potentially that's a lead measure for maybe engagement, which is a lead measure for, you know, call to action or opt-ins of some description or whatever it might be. But the lead measure would be an actionable you know, tasks that they could take. So number of posts or number of blog posts or number of podcasts or whatever it might be, the actions specifically, they can control. And focusing on that as much as the outcomes or the results-based objectives or the results-based targets, I find is critical right. to success, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there's a clear sort of there's lots of different objectives and targets that people can put in place. The other thing I often suggest is not to just sit there and hang your hat on one particular objective. You don't want to sit there and go, right, well, we're going to make $1 million this year, and that's the be all and end all of targets for the year.
Yeah, totally. I think your target should be in context to the overall outcome that you want. I mean, I'm assuming here in the podcast that we're talking primarily to small to medium-sized companies.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea, but I'd also hope and pray. I'd also hope that there's people in senior marketing roles. bigger organizations that perhaps have to set targets for their team, set targets internally for a team that might only have, that might have 3 or 4 people in it, that might have, 15 people in it and upwards. So, I want to get the kind of psychology of the reason for doing this and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think, I can definitely profess that those bigger organizations are not my bread and butter. Mine is the small to medium, so I can give context to that. But I think talking to them, and look, you could apply it to the bigger organizations where you've got, if you're a marketing manager listening, it's going to come down to that overall objective that's then set down. Now, if you're a business owner or an entrepreneur listening to this, one of the first things that I talk about is, well, what's the vision for the company and what do you want to accomplish personally from this enterprise?
Yeah.
And then breaking it back and using that as the context. I have a little bit more of a, maybe call it a warm, fuzzy kind of approach when I'm working with SMEs, especially with the business owners themselves. It'll be specifically around, what your ideal day or ideal week or, outcome looks like at the end. And then we're going to work back and add numbers to it, which is then going to, in turn, give, context or scope to those other objectives.
That's a really good point. And I've actually had both types that I can think straight away of times when I've had both types of those conversations with two different organizations. So one conversation I had, and I often use this story, was when I was working with a physiotherapist, and he had a small practice. I think he had something like 5 or 6 staff. He'd owned it. He'd built it up. A lot of loyal customers. There was a Pilates room in it as well, all those kind of things. And I said to him, what did he want to achieve? And he wasn't focused on numbers. He simply turned around and said, I want to have Fridays off. And that to him was his goal. And just as you've said, we then went, right, well, in order for you to have Fridays off, his bookings were very slow on Mondays and Tuesdays. And the outcome and the goal was to sit there and go, right, well, we have to fix that. We have to fix that gap in your business, those Mondays and Tuesdays, because if we can fix that gap on Mondays and Tuesdays, you don't need to be here on Fridays.
Totally.
And just like you've said, we then work back the numbers from that to actually put that all sort of into context. The second conversation that I remember that was very interesting, and it will be a client that I no doubt touch on again in the future. But the conversation we had was, where did you want to be in 5 years? And he had a huge vision for his business in 3 separate channels, 3 separate businesses and brands and all those kind of things. And he mapped out what he saw in terms of turnover and size and sales. Now because he went straight for the numbers. The interesting thing was when we mapped that back and said, right, for you to achieve that, you're going to need these members of staff. We were talking about taking his organization from a 6 or 7 person operation up to a 40 to 50 person operation. And that was a very, daunting's the wrong word. That was an eye-opening realization for him.
Yeah, a reality check.
Yeah, absolutely. Because getting that amount of staff suddenly meant everything he'd been doing in the previous years, the habits that he had needed to change.
That's right. He wasn't going to be able to be the be all and end all there. When you're talking that size organization, you got to learn how to manage people effectively very quickly.
Absolutely. With six or seven people, it's a flat structure. That's and everybody right. knows you, who yeah. you are as the boss and all those kind of things. With 50 people, there's chances are that people will be dealing with your organization and never even know who you as the CEO or the managing director or whatever you want to call yourself is.
Mm.
Do you think either of those two, do you think there's a better way of approaching it? Do you think it's better to think in that, as you described it, in that the warm and fuzzy space? Or do you think it's better to go, you know what, let's start with the numbers and work that back? Or is it just a, you know, horses for courses type thing?
Look, I think people are going to have their own inclination to a certain, you know, to a certain side of the spectrum. I do believe that we're emotional creatures. We're creatures of habit and feelings and emotions, and we want to actually accomplish. I have this fundamental belief that we all want a sense of belonging, and we want to be fulfilled. Right. And at the core of that, if you can find something that fulfills that in a business, you know, the hard work doesn't occur as hard work then. I put it hard work in inverted commas. Like, it doesn't occur like that because you're working towards fulfilling a vision or a purpose at a greater level. So look, fundamentally, I might be a bit different. I do like to dig a bit deeper with the business owner if I get the opportunity to work with the business owner. I know in your case, Simon, you know, and with the marketers here, they don't necessarily get that opportunity, but that's the sandbox that I like to play in, because I get to then dig a bit deeper and say, well, hang on, why are you here? What are you doing? What does it look like to be fulfilled as an entrepreneur? Because it's all well and good building a you know, a multi-million dollar business, but I know so many entrepreneurs that have quote unquote successful businesses that are, you know, dramatically unhappy and just not fulfilled. So,
yeah.
You know, I believe life's too short to operate from that. And, you know, hence why I lead down that path as opposed to strictly by the numbers.
When you get those kind of objectives out of a business owner, do you encourage them to write it down or broadcast it? Or is it something that you feel should be in a hard copy pinned up on their wall? Or how do you suggest that they have a relationship with those objectives?
So their personal objectives or the
either or. I mean, or. You know, yeah.
Yeah, look, I think the personal one, I think they're different. Like you said, horses for courses. I think the personal objectives, I'm a big believer of writing things down in pen and paper still. I might be old school, but I think there's something. No. In fact, I was listening to a Tim Ferriss podcast yesterday, and he was interviewing Walter Isaacson.
Oh, yeah, I listened to that one. That's excellent. Yeah.
Fantastic podcast. And, you know, he was talking about the benefit or the therapeutic values of writing it down on pen and paper because there's a permanency to it.
Yeah.
And when there's a permanency to it, related to that so much. So, you know, I'm a big believer of getting it out, getting it down on paper. If it's the personal aspects, like whether it's your ideal day or what you want to fulfill on a personal level, then, you know, that doesn't have to be shared. That doesn't have to be pinned up anywhere. It could be just in a journal or, you know, or whatever you use to keep a diary or whatever it might be. But as far as strategic objectives for the team, I think, you know, visibility breeds accountability, both personally as well as at a team level. So if it's up, it's out, it's public. I mean, when I say public, I don't necessarily need your clients to be seeing it, obviously.
Yeah.
But if you've got a team and you're building a team, then have those strategic objectives up, have a scoreboard up. People underestimate the value of a scoreboard in a business. I promise you that.
I mean, you call it a scoreboard. I've see people to refer to as a scorecard or something. Explain to me, or explain to you know, the people listening, what a scoreboard is to you.
Okay.
Because I've seen multiple different ones, but I'm just interested to see.
Yeah.
Understand what it would look like just visually. I mean, I know.
Well, give you. An,
I know
you
we're an audio medium here, but just, you know.
I'll do my best at telling the story. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you an example. That's probably the best way to do it. So for some of you might know that I used to own the Gold Coast branch of the National College of Business, and we had two scoreboards. Literally, were boards. Obviously, there were scorecard aspects to it. You know, if I was catching it with my coach, I couldn't necessarily take these massive glass whiteboards with me. But I actually had two 1,200 by 700 whiteboards,
okay,
glass whiteboards. And on one was our key scores, our key, you know, and that was, you know, events coming up with attendance and registrations. It was groups coming up with names on it. So I could get a visual at a glance. I could see how we were tracking in reality. Number of calls made, number of connections made for, depending on the different roles. So each different department of the business had its own scores. They weren't all up on the board, but the key scores, so that I, as the business owner, could then come along and at a glance, in the grand total of 2 or 3 minutes, could see how we were tracking. And it just allowed me to keep my finger on the pulse. So that's what I mean by scoreboard. And then we had another scoreboard, and you'd relate to it as a scoreboard, which tied in with our theme. And what I mean by theme, each quarter we had a particular theme, because I believe creating targets is important, but this, I also believe there's three parts to any game, and that's context, scores, and actions. And so context is the theme in which you're operating from. It could be your core values or your mission or whatever it might be, but each quarter we'd have a particular theme. And I remember one quarter we had, we called it the GC 400, which is just passed, but the GC 600 is the actual event, but we had a particular target, and 400 represented a particular score for us, a revenue target. And so we actually reproduced a racetrack on the wall, right? And we had the actual GC 600 racetrack on the wall, and we have cars, and one car was, the blue car was the date of the quarter, or the time frame. We basically broke the track into 90 days, and the other was the revenue. And so it was just literally a race between the red car and the blue car around this track. And again, it was a visual display of keeping us on target. Now, some of you might be thinking that's a bit quirky, but I tell you what, it's enrolling. People love playing. I believe people love playing games if the games are created effectively. So that could be a version of a scoreboard as well.
That's fantastic. And I think, you know, that sort of thing can be applied. I think that sort of thing can be applied to any business. I
tell you the funniest thing, Simon. I've seen. I had a client who was a very well-known air conditioning company in the western suburbs of Brisbane, and I've seen two of his senior aircon techs. Their scoreboard was they created two teams within the business, and they had a scoreboard which was literally a whiteboard divided in two. Red team, blue team, with circles on it. And every time they did an install, they got to put a smiley face in a circle, right? Yeah. I'm just serious, right?
Yeah.
And they had 40 circles on both sides, and it was which team could get to the 40 first.
Right.
And I've seen senior, literally, watch this with my own eyes, seen senior air contacts run from the front door to the scoreboard to put a smiley face in a circle. That just kind of goes to show you the power of, if it's created effectively, the power of it.
That is engagement right
yeah.
there. That is engaging with your team and your staff. That's in the most simplest way. It doesn't, you know, smiley faces.
Face.
It doesn't need any more complexity than that to get people.
Two dots and a curve. You know,
that's fantastic. I mean, I think back about my time in a sort of a large corporate at the late end of or middle of 2000s, and they had a scorecard, and we used to get a CEO roadshow every 3 months, and they'd come along and they'd put the scorecard up on a I was going to say overhead projector, but it's not that old. they put it up on a laptop and a projector, and you know they'd talk through it, and we'd all sort of want to strangle ourselves after about an hour and a half of that.
Boring.
It lacked. Yeah, the problem was there. It was very corporate. They were trying to cram all this information into a single page to try and make it, engaging. And it just sort of, it failed.
Yeah,
it failed on them.
The truth probably was he didn't want to be there doing it as much as you did want to be there. And so obviously just got communicated.
So I think that the takeout from there is, everyone, all businesses should have some sort of scorecard or, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't need to be complex, but if you can make it engaging and if you can make it fun, then even better. The next question I've got for you is, how far out do you think people should be planning? I mean, going back to that story earlier on, he was 5 years ahead of himself. And I think the challenge that had occurred with that was that that 5 years had caused, it was either paralysis right at that point, because he was thinking so far ahead that he wasn't thinking about what's going to happen next week or what's going to happen the next 3 months. But it also, because it was 5 years, it failed to inject any sense of
urgency
in what needed to be done. It was everything. Well, if you didn't achieve something this month, that didn't matter. There was another month, next month, and so on and so forth. How far do you think 5 years is bad, or should it be 1 year, or should it be a combination of all of those things?
Oh, look, I think 5 years in this day and age is far too long. And with technological changes and, you know, industry shifts, it's just, I think 5 years is just way too far out. I think three years and 12 months, I think 3 years to kind of create the context, you know, of the 12-month objectives or 12-month game. 3 years, 12 months, and then quarterly. I made the mistake early on of setting a 12-month game. And it was near impossible to keep it alive, because fundamentally that's what you want to be doing. It's all well and good to set these objectives, but you got to keep it alive and present, which is why I kind of like to introduce the concept of game, because game is way more engaging. So, but trying to keep alive a 12-month game, it'd be like watching football, you know, your football, not our football. Like watching football that went for 3 days.
Yeah.
Kind of like a test match.
Le Mans 24-hour Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's just, you're like, oh, okay, cool. And only the diehard would stick through it. But for the average punter, it was like, oh. And you know how people kind of leave stuff to the last minute anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I've always found personally that, you know, I've tried to have a 5-year plan and, you know, and it's failed miserably. What I've always found the most effective, and I consistently beat myself up because I don't do it enough, but I find the 90-day plans are the best.
Yeah, I think so.
Because you can put 10 things in there that you want to achieve in 90 days, and I think that's a reasonable, you know, that's a reasonable sort of expectation within that time frame of doing all the other bits and pieces that you have to do in life. Mm. I think 5 years is too far. Having said that, again, depending on who you are from a business perspective,
that's right.
If you're a bigger business, then and you've got shareholders or you've got, you know, important stakeholders, then
that's right.
A 5-year look to the future plan isn't necessarily bad, as long as it's not the only plan.
Correct.
If you're having 5 years and then you're breaking them up into year goals and then you're breaking those years up into 90-day plans, that could easily work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you want to be observant and looking for trends, that's for sure. You know, and especially, like you said, the bigger the company, the bigger organization, the further out you want to project. But I definitely wouldn't get caught up in the need to have a rigorous plan that far out, that's for sure.
The next step, the next point that I wanted to make is that one of the things that I find, that I try and say to clients is when you're building your plan is to try and gather as much historical data as you can. A lot of people fail to buy into the value of looking at what you've done in the past to try and draw some plans and conclusions for what you can do in the future. Do you find that a useful exercise?
Hmm.
Putting you on the spot there.
No, you are. That's like, as a guide, you've got, there's certain realities. Having said that, you know, what you achieved 12 months ago, you know, it was 12 months ago.
Yeah.
And you've got the opportunity now to recreate, and you've, the old saying goes, you walk a mile, you see a mile. Mm. You know, what you've used and what you've accomplished inside of the context 12 months ago, or how you perceived business and your knowledge, your understanding, you know, your understanding of the marketplace, that could be vastly different 12 months on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would.
I'll give you an example of where I've seen it be useful, because if you've got an organization that's a sales focused organization, the key for me is for them to understand how much revenue a single salesperson can generate.
Yes.
So for them to sit there and go, right, well, we think it's a reasonable expectation that any salesperson that we've got on earning, let's say, $70,000 a year can generate 10 times their own salary in sales. And those are just random numbers. That's that, you know, so anybody who's got sales out there, sales staff out there, don't start panicking that they're not doing that.
They're not doing 10 times.
Christ, they're doing two. Well, if they're doing two, then you probably have got a bit of a concern on your hand. But that's how I think historical data can be used to sit there and say, look, here's how we've performed in the past. Here's some rules about our business. Here's some things that are some things that we can change, and here's some things that we can't change that are almost givens in the business.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's how I think people can use that historical data, in the past. Another good example would be where you look at, say, busy periods in your Google Analytics data, your web data, to sort of understand trends in your business to go, you know, if we're going to need extra staff or short-term staff, or we're going to need to overinvest in quiet periods from a marketing perspective, then here's where all those quiet periods are. You might be slow in December and January, or you might be slow at the end of the
financial
year.
That's the example I was just about to use, you know, like Christmas coming up. It's always a good one. It never ceases to amaze me in January. People go, oh, December was quiet. Okay, well, Christmas is the same time every year. What did you do differently to plan for it? No, well, I don't know, nothing.
Do you know what? I've known big businesses that suddenly go, oh, we're having a quiet January, and you sort of go, well, January's
hang on, quiet for historically. So that's a good example of historical. If you go, look, and then also setting targets around that. It's a really good example. Actually, is you know that if you know December and January is quiet, don't set your marketing and sales targets to be the same as June. If June's your, June's your most, profitable or biggest year, biggest month, be unrealistic.
Yeah, absolutely. The last thing I just wanted to touch on with objectives for this episode is budgets and investment. This absolutely echoes all the other, if people don't have business targets, the chances of them actually having a marketing budget are, slim to none. Is there any rules that you've seen about how people should think about, their budgets? I mean, I've often seen businesses where they go, right, well, we should be spending, 25% on terms of cost of goods, 25% on staff, 25% of our turnover on overheads, and then 25% should be profit. Is that still true in this day and age?
That's a really good question, because I said this in my last podcast. I'm more of a shoot first, ask questions later. But this is a question that comes up a lot. Especially with business owners that have been going maybe for 5 or 6 years, and they're like, well, I think we're doing well because, we're spending X, and that's kind of what I think is the right thing. The best tool that I've come across is industry benchmarks.
Okay.
Talk to your accountant. They will generally have it. The ATO have industry benchmarks that are publicly available. I don't know this is gospel, so please don't quote me on this, but word on the street is that's what they use to flag audits.
Right.
As far as if your marketing expense is outside of the benchmark, or your client meetings or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But they have, it's probably not as in depth as maybe the one you'd get from your accounting firm. And I know there's companies that specialize in it. And I find it really good, because they actually, they may not have every business, but they've got ones that are relative to pretty much every business. And they will have, the ones that I used to use back at the National College of Business was, they would have, let's call it a digital agency, marketing agency.
Yep.
And they would say, marketing agency with revenue between $0 and $150,000, marketing agency for revenue from $150,000 to $500,000, and marketing agency of, $500,000 onwards, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Because it might vary in the different percentages of what you should and shouldn't be spending on certain things.
Okay.
But in the context of marketing, I'm always a believer of, and I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong, allowable acquisition costs, and lifetime value of a client.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do is we're going to touch on customer lifetime value in the next masterclass, because I think we've got enough here to sum up for this one. But what I do want to sort of just finish on is my understanding of a marketing budget, because I always walk into clients and they go, right, we want to do this, then. And obviously when you used to run a marketing agency or even now as a consultant, I sit there and go, right, what's your budget? Because, you know, we can achieve anything you want if you're going to throw, you know, the money at it. But let's be realistic here and let's go, you're not going to throw anything at it because you don't have that money and you don't have that cash flow to be able to do that. So let's be realistic with what we want to invest in. And so I then say, what's your budget? And then the first thing they do is answer a question with a question and say, well, what should we spend? And then you all end up in there in this kind of, Wild West scenario where you're both looking at each other as your eyes are kind of closing slightly and you're trying to suss them out how much money they've got. They're trying to suss you out how expensive you're going to be, et cetera, et cetera. I'm now more about the transparency and I turn around to people and say, okay, I'll give you a benchmark and I'm going to say somewhere between 5 to 10% of your turnover should be invested in your marketing. Mm-hmm. And there's some caveats around that is that 5% is the benchmark. Every dollar you spend, we would want to see that return to your business 20 times over. If you're doing things right, that's a good benchmark. If you're in a faster growing mode or you want to overinvest to grow your business faster, you probably want to be closer to the 10% than the 5%.
Yeah. And you mentioned 20% there. Is that a realistic understanding?
No, sorry, 5 to 10%.
No, but and then you want to get 20 times, I should say.
Oh, 20 times. That's what I would think of as a reasonable target.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Spending a dollar to make $20.
Yep.
There's a lot of factors in that, but you know, having said that, I'd be turning around and say, look, if I could spend $10 and make $100,
of course.
So, you know, I'd be happy with that as well.
Yeah.
But once you get finely tuned, once you've, you're really nurturing your leads and you're nurturing your existing customers and all those kind of things, especially if you're really good at nurturing your existing customers and you're getting them to return over and over again, then those costs drop down quite considerably because nurturing the existing customer is a lot cheaper than going and finding a new customer.
Mm.
So, somewhere between 5 to 10%. However, I then go, some of the bigger brands, some of the franchisees would spend up to 14%. There's some major retail brands that will be spending 14, 15% of their annual turnover on branding and marketing and all those kind of things. I've also spoken to a lot of like building companies and industrial companies where their marketing expenses are around about 2 or 3%. Mm. And generally they're in a team putting tenders together because that's their marketing. But I think one of the points I wanted to make out here is a lot of people don't understand where they're spending money on marketing. And again, a huge construction business I spoke to once didn't understand this. And I said to them, they go, oh, look, we don't spend any money on marketing. And I went, really? They said, no, we don't spend any money on marketing. And I sort of said, well, who's doing all your tenders?
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, well, yeah, obviously we've got a team doing tenders. I said, well, that's marketing, isn't it? And they went, well, okay, yeah, but we don't spend any more money than that. And I looked out their window and there's a, you know, giant truck or van or something out there with their logo emblazoned across the side. The guy sitting opposite me in a table with a branded shirt on. There's brochures on the tables and things like that. And I'm going, what about your shirts and your trucks and your brochures? Who's doing all those? And they go, oh, well, yeah, obviously we do those as marketing. People don't sometimes understand where they're spending marketing dollars.
Yeah.
And I find that, I've seen that happen so many times. Have you seen that as well?
All the time. Yeah, that's the best example you could have given. So what about your $150,000 a year estimators that are sitting there full time? You're actually spending $450,000 worth of marketing every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't get that. So, yeah. But going back to the original point, in terms of sitting there saying to people, if you're going to think about putting a marketing budget together and you're actually going to take this seriously in terms of growing your business, once you put your targets together, then let's see how much money we've got to spend to start achieving those targets. Mm. And I always say to people that 5 to 10% is your area to play in. And then the challenge I say to them is that you're not going to spend that 5% evenly across the year. Mm. As we've mentioned, you might be quiet in December and January. So let's think about where we're going to overinvest the budget, because we know that there's a lot more prospects out there. There's a lot more chance of you winning business. So that to me is how I envisage a marketing budget. Is that the sort of thing that you've, again, I know you're not sort of, you know, going granular detail with marketing budgets, but is that the sort of thing that you would see out there?
Yeah, look, I haven't, look, the people, again, depending on who's listening to this, if you're listening as a marketing manager for a bigger company, then obviously this is, you know, basic bananas. But if you're an SME, I think what you've just said then, Simon, is absolute gold. Mm. I think there's that many people out there, because I don't see that. I don't see people going or coming up with a 5% of revenue equation and putting that money aside. I'd love to see that. I'm sure you would too. In fact, as you were saying it, I was like, one of the things I'm an advocate for with business owners, with SMEs in particular, is sub accounts and managing cash flow effectively.
Yeah.
You know, because especially from a marketing perspective, and what I was visualizing in my head as you were saying that was literally a sub account with 5% weekly getting or monthly getting, you know, transferred in that particular marketing account. I know that's something we had with Staffberry. Yeah. We had a marketing account specifically for, I was a marketer's dream, because it was my mission. I had to spend it every quarter. Like I had to spend it.
Okay.
Because if I didn't spend it, it wouldn't be, you know, I wasn't obviously working on my lead measures. So,
and I love that idea of a sub account. I think that's perfect, because there is nothing more ridiculous than seeing a business turn around to you and say, it's really slow at the moment, so we're not going to spend any money on marketing.
That's right.
You're just going, that's the reason you're slow.
That's right.
And you say it through gritted teeth and slap your forehead with your palm. But, I think if you take that route that you've suggested there, there is money there. It's
always
it's tucked away. You know, it might be 6% one quarter or 4% another quarter. You might adjust it accordingly. But there's then no excuse for not investing, even if times are quiet or if times are busy.
Yeah, and if you start to relate to it like the lifeblood, which it is the lifeblood of a business, sales and marketing. It's kind of like, again, and this is just coming to me now as an opportunity to really empower business owners as well. Is it that money? Consider that money's already spent.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like put that 5 to 10% or whatever it is that you want to budget aside, like your GST, your PAYG and your superannuation, which should be in a sub account. And if you're listening and you don't have a sub account for that, it's the...
Seven years of mistakes there, mate. Let's not dress that up again for me.
The amount of times. But anyway, but consider that money already spent.
Yeah.
Invest it.
Absolutely. So what I just want to do finally is just recap those points from today. And I'll recap them, Simon, if you just want to shout out at any point, go
sure.
Go right ahead. So the first thing I want to say to people, and these are lessons that I want people to, you know, take away and actually action. So number one, I want people to have a think about business targets. Think about what they're trying to achieve. Don't overplay it with a five-year goal. Just maybe have some long-term goals, but let's start thinking about breaking up your business into 90-day or, you know, quarterly targets, quarterly objectives. I'm sure everybody out there has heard of SMART objectives and all those kind of things, but let's make sure they're things that you can achieve. So get some targets together, and you might have targets that you want to put up on the wall that the whole team can see. You might just have targets that you want to keep to yourself. The second thing is go and look back at some of the historical data that you have access to, be that Google Analytics, be that P&Ls or sales data, all those kind of things. Use that data to see if there's any trends that you can discover, any useful information that will help you plan for the next 90 days or the next year or the next 2 years, whatever it is. There is a huge amount of data in there. One other thing I'll quickly touch on is that there's a lot of industry data out there as well.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to be using your data to understand a trend in the industry. You can find industry reports and so on and so forth. And the last thing I want to add in there is think about your marketing budget. Think about it as an actual number, as a percentage of your overall turnover. Think of it going into a sub-account, sub-bank account, in the same way that you would pay your PAYG and your GST and your super, and put that money aside so that it is always there. So if times are slow, you've got budget to spend to generate more business. If times are busy, you've got budget to make it even busier and make sure those slow times never actually happen. So that's kind of summing up the points that I wanted to make from today. Any kind of last words or other things that you'd like to add on to there, Simon?
I just think the one that I want to add in there is visibility breeds accountability. So get those objectives up on a scoreboard, get them visible for your teams, and obviously be responsible for what gets displayed, but visibility breeds accountability. And that's for you as well as a business owner, for the business owner.
Brilliant. Now that finishes up our first masterclass. We hope you found that useful. We are going to intersperse these. I know me and Simon enjoyed doing them, or maybe we just enjoyed talking to each other, whatever it is. We enjoy doing them. We enjoy helping imparting some knowledge out there. So please check back, please follow the masterclasses, and hopefully you'll get the opportunity to start building your own business plan, your own marketing plan from them. Finally, please, if you get a chance, review this podcast. You can follow us on The Simon Dell Show, as we've changed the name, on Instagram. I'm available on all sorts of social media channels, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Simon Bell, you're available on where?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. So if you want to talk to either of us, you'll find us easily on LinkedIn. Other than that, we hope to see you tune in to the next masterclass. Thank you.
Cheers.